You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 559, the shorty episode. And we're back. This is Punk News Podcast number 559, and you might be saying, John, why is this a shorty episode? Well, A, we've been doing lots of long episodes lately. So, you know, a shorty here and there, it's a good thing to do. You know, if the conversation is ripping along, roaring along, 90 minutes is cool. I prefer like an hour, 10 or so, but this is going to be a shorty. Answer number two is because this is why we're really doing a shorty this week is, A, tomorrow I will be seeing Alice Cooper. Then Saturday and Sunday I will be selling records in Philadelphia. So come to the Philadelphia Punk Rock Flea Market and buy lots of records from John. And I did decide to pull my Jethro Tull records off my shelf and put them in the for sale bin. We'll see how that works out for me in the long run. Then Monday I am flying out to L.A. for the Leftover Crack book release show. Come on out. Alex's Bar. Monday, 8 p.m., Slaughterhouse is opening. The band has got an extremely cool lineup for this show, which I'm not going to tell you about, but it is rad and unique, and it's going to be a really, really cool lineup. And there's going to be a lot of special guests in the audience. Will they get on stage? I don't know. There's actually going to be at least two special guests in the audience that is going to blow people's mind, but I'm not going to say it out loud because I just asked them if they wanted to come and they said yes, and I didn't want to be like, will you get on stage too? But we'll see what happens. I don't know. Then on Thursday I am flying out to Las Vegas. Thursday night at 8 p.m., I am seeing Fear. Then Friday I am going to go to Zia Records. Then I am going to go to Punk Rock Bowling and see Bad Cop at 3:30, then FYP at 4, then I will sit through D4 at 5:10, then I will love the Dwarves at 5:55, then I will pretty much enjoy the Queers at 7:10, then I will thoroughly enjoy the Descendants at 9:15, then I will sprint down to the place on 7th and see Dog Party at 11:20, then I will sit there and stay there and very much enjoy Mean Jeans at 12:05, and then I will love seeing Lunatics at 1:05, then I will go to sleep. The next morning I will wake up and go to the other Zia Records, then I will go back to Punk Rock Bowling and see Side Eyes at 2:10, then I will stare at the floor for 3 hours until Youth Brigade comes out at 5:10, and I'll say it's Youth Brigade. Then Leftover Crack will play at 6:25, and I will love it. Then I will see the Aggrolites at 7:10, then Youth of Today 8:35, I will scoff while everyone else has a good time, and I'll say these lyrics are cheesy. Then Circle Jerks will blow my mind at 9:15. Then I will sprint to the Fremont to see DFL from 10:40 to 11 o'clock. Then I will sprint to the Citrix desk to see Crazy in the Brains from 11:20 to 11:45. Then I will sprint to the Nerd Bar to see Verbal Abuse and MDC at 12:10. Then the next morning I will go see that record store that's like kind of in the middle of nowhere that has like a bunch of old stuff sitting around it. Oh no, the next morning I wake up at 11 o'clock and I will see Black Dahlia do a count 'em 3-3-3-hour show. Who could see that coming? Then I will see then I will see Crazy in the Brains again at about 3:20. Then I will see MDC again at 4:40. Then I will see All at 5:10. Then I will see English Beat at 7:10. Then I will see Lunatics at 7:45. Then I will see Municipal Waste at 8:35. And then I will love seeing Devo at 9:15. And then I will retreat to the Citrus desk to see the Slackers. And then I will return triumphantly to Philadelphia. So that's why tonight's episode is a shorty episode.
Oh my God. I'm so freaking happy for you. That's awesome.
Thank you. Awesome.
That is like, it sounds like, I don't know. It sounds like normal life. It doesn't sound like COVID life, but I know you're going to be safe about it. But that's just like that. You just listing all those bands and being able to do all that shit. I'm like, I can't remember the last time I did all that shit. I used to just sprint from shows, one band to the next all the time. Now I can't remember the last time I did that. I'm so happy for you. I hope you got a new pair of shoes. You're going to need like running shoes, right?
He needs insoles. He needs orthotics.
yes, Sammy Sam. Yes, he needs some really supportive footwear for all of this.
And I will also wear a neck brace to protect myself while headbanging. So anyway, if you are in LA, come out to the Leftover Crack release show. I mean, this is going to be one for the books, people. And then if you're in Punk Rock Bowling, come say hi. There's a lot of cool stuff happening. So I'm not sure I will go see Side Eyes. I probably will because I really want to see Side Eyes. I don't really want to stand around for 3 hours, but I can go check out the booth, which kills an hour. I don't know, man. I'll probably go see Side Eyes. I want to see him, but just, 3 hours of standing around is rough. But anyways, listen, if I'm in the position to complain about shows, that's a pretty good position to be in, people. Also, we're here with M-More, what's happening?
Hello. Yeah, you're Your lineup sounds really good. I can't beat that.
Oh, Emma, do you have like a possessed carrot or something?
Shit, Emma, yeah.
Did she have like a possessed carrot in her house or something?
Yes, I have a paranormal carrot experience. So, there's a free band name. If anyone wants to use paranormal carrots, it's up.
Great name.
So we bought this huge bag of carrots. And we have them, like, laid on the counter and covered with a dish towel to, like, keep them fresh and stuff. So, when was it? I think it was, like, 3:30.
Today?
No, yesterday morning.
Oh, wow.
There was, like, this giant crash. So, like, woke up and it was like, oh, shit, what's happened? Like, has someone tried to get into the house? Like, what's going on? So, go out. And the towel that's on the carrot has been, like, crunched up, like, accordion style, you know? So, like, none of the carrots are covered. Two of the carrots have been pushed off of the counter. One is broken near in half. And, like, the carrots weren't anywhere near the ledge there, you know? They were safe.
Yeah.
And, like, we have a cat, and she couldn't have gotten up there and swiped it, like, because it would have, the towel wouldn't have done that. So we have no idea what had happened to it, and that's my paranormal carrot story.
So you have a bunny ghost in your house.
That would be perfect, because we had, my mom bought a milk can, like, you know, those really old metal milk cans.
Yeah.
When I was
Wait, what's an old metal milk can?
They're like the size of a small child.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like they're huge and they have like a little top and like they're metal and So my mom bought one of those at a yard sale when I was about maybe 6 or 7. And it moved by itself in the basement. My dad and I watched it. We heard something upstairs, and we ran down, and we saw it, and it was, like, ticking. Like, it was, like, going, like, from, you know, deet, 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 on, like, a side-to-side kind of thing. So we kind of think that might be something might have stayed from that encounter.
Okay, so you definitely have a paranormal ghost bunny in the house.
Yes.
If, like, Bugs Bunny died, maybe that's Bugs, because he does have personality.
See, that's the most gruesome thought I've ever heard in my entire life. Maybe you've got a brutally killed Bugs Bunny haunting your house.
It's possible. Like, I can't imagine a regular bunny making anything into accordions. Like, you know, Bugs Bunny would.
And there was the crunch.
Yeah, and so. A crunch.
I think those carrots were trying to get out. You were trying to figure out if someone was trying to get into the house, but it was really the carrots were trying to escape.
The carrots are inside the house already. Have you ever had any paranormal produce or any a possessed pepper, perhaps, or
No, you guys. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I like grew up in the neighborhood haunted house. Like mine was the house that people would talk about.
Oh wow!
And then the college that I went to is also notoriously haunted. Like entire books have been written on like how haunted my college campus at Kenyon College was, and I never saw. Shit. I never saw anything where I was like, okay, like maybe this stuff is real, but maybe just something about my aura, my vibe that I give off is just like, hey, y'all, like you do you, I'll do me. Like, please don't make yourselves known to me. Like, please just, you know, keep your distance. I'm not that interested. But when my cat Ramona died, like a few months later, I felt her jump on the bed. It was like a very specific sound and feeling that I was used to, because she would have to like jump way up to like, I had a, like a platform bed. So she had to like jump pretty far up to get up onto it. And then you just hear the like soft little like thud of her like landing on my duvet. And like a few months after she died, I like felt it and heard it to the point where like my heart was racing and I couldn't like turn around because I was like, is the dead cat on my bed right now? And that's really the only, she's the only one. She's the only one that was able to break through from the other side to me. And these boundaries, the paranormal boundaries I've apparently set up around myself. So yeah, no, that's my only ghost story, my ghost cat. Oh, and then I wrote a song called Ghost Cat that we performed on the Chris Gethard show, like all the time. Like people that were Gethard show fans would definitely recognize it because it was like one of our favorite ones to play. That was a much longer answer than I bet you were expecting to get to that question, John Gentile.
Sam Barrett, have you ever had any ghost pets and/or produce?
No ghosts in my life yet. I do think that I could care less about ghosts, and I might actually scare a ghost away. I don't know. You could ask my husband what he thinks about that, because I scare most things away, actually.
Well, then maybe a bigger question, Sam, is are you terrified now that Rod Stewart today announced a brand new album coming out? Should we all be terrified?
I'm going to forget that you just said that.
All right, people, enough joking around. Enough talking about Rod Stewart and ghost zucchinis. Listen, who's going to play a song? And more, play a song. Something ghosty.
Okay. Oh, actually, yeah, it kind of does mention, like, death. So this is the new song by Montreal-based experimental punks Visibly Choked. It's called Mother Tongue, and it's off their upcoming new EP.
Died.
was visibly choked doing mother tongue. And let's get this week's quick news session. Okay, listen, I had it pulled up and then I totally lost track of it. All right, listen, I'm going to pull up the news right now because we don't want to waste any time in this episode.
You mean that ghost tangent threw you off your game a little bit?
Guys, I'm scared. speaking of being scared, Record Store Day Black Friday has announced its new list of releases. This release, the punk community seemed resoutingly underwhelmed. Bands that are releasing stuff as part of Record Store Day Black Friday this year include Joe Strummer the State of Joe Strummer releasing a 12-inch of Johnny Apple. Johnny Appleseed? I think. And At the Border guy on the flip side, Alice Cooper is re-releasing Brutal Planet. Lou Reed is releasing his record. Well, I mean, the Estate of Lou Reed is releasing a record recorded with Kris Kristofferson, kind of like a MTV Unplugged kind of thing. Judas Priest is having one of their records re-released, Dio. But there is hardly any punk rock on it at all. And usually there's a fair amount of punk and punkish stuff. This time, a little bit of U-Roy, maybe some Weird Al, some Wailing Souls. But everyone seemed to shrug their shoulders after 2 years, essentially, of Record Store Day drops where a lot of records were released. Sammy B, Record Store Day Black Friday. You and I usually go out and hit up the Record Store Day. Will you be hitting up Record Store Day Black Friday? And is it finally out of gas? Sadly or happily?
Oh, heck no. I'm not leaving my damn house. I looked at the list, and there's nothing I want. So thank you, Record Store Day, for saving me money and allowing me to buy better Christmas presents. I'm not into this. I love Record Store Day. I love the idea of Record Store Day. I actually love Record Store Day, like, back in the day when I used to go every year. These days, it's been hit or miss. I might not go, even though it's my marriage vows to my husband, whatever. I don't need any more re-releases of Kenny G. I don't need any more re-releases of Weird Things. The only time I'll, like, find something that I'll get on Record Store Day, if it's, like, a first release of something, I really think that they need to not produce so much records because it's giving a backlog on all of the new stuff that I want to come out. So yeah, that's my hot take from this.
People were pretty critical of Record Store Day both last year and this year, and it seems like the criticism grows and wanes, but it seems like it's growing more than it's waning lately. I thought the Record Store Day drops, I thought a ton of really, really cool stuff came out, and I bought a lot of stuff, and I've really been enjoying all of it, frankly. So I can't poo-poo Record Store Day overall, setting aside the fact of whether it actually is a net positive or net negative for record stores. But it seems like every record that participates now thinks it's a net positive. So I'm pro Record Store Day these days. I think the releases from this past year and the year before were fantastic. The cool Devo stuff, the cool Hawkwind stuff, the cool, Sublime stuff, the cool Alice Cooper stuff. But honestly, this time around, very underwhelming. And I'm relieved because I did drop a fair amount of bank at Record Store Day this year and last year. So that's fine. Maybe I'll just get like two things. I'll probably get the Weird Al 12-inch just because it is a cool track and it's cool to have. I might get Wailing Souls or U-Roy. Joe Strummer, it's like I keep getting these Joe Strummer Record Store Day, and I feel like a freaking dumbass every single time. It is literally just two tracks from his album that's already been pressed on vinyl multiple times. You can get on vinyl right now. So it's like it's just stupid. Like you can either buy the 12-inch that has all the songs on it or the 12-inch that has two of the songs for the same price. It's a dumb item. It's particularly frustrating because there are so many very good Joe Strummer bootlegs. As we know now, thanks to Joe Strummer 101, that there probably aren't that many good Joe Strummer outtakes. But there are – I've got at least three of them, three amazing Joe Strummer live bootlegs that honestly any guy or girl that knows mastering at all could spend one day, make it sound pro quality, and bada bing, bada boom, you've got a killer release everyone wants. So it's just weird and lazy, I guess. That being said, will I buy it? Maybe, because I'm in deep enough already, so I mean, I might as well get one more. You know, I don't know. So anyways, I think there's nothing thrilling here, and there's nothing that you're not going to be able to get on Discogs for a cheap price, frankly. But, you know, it's all right. It's not great this time around. Hallie Bullet, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs all around.
I thought it was cool. I mean, yeah, maybe there wasn't like a ton of punk, but I thought it was like, I don't know, it seemed there was like a lot of different kinds of stuff being released. And I got particularly intrigued by that Kris Kristofferson and Lou Reed release. I was like, what's that about? I need to know more. So this is kind of cool. You started to explain it, John. This was like a singer-songwriter series that they used to have at the Bottom Line in New York City back in the 90s. And like you said, it kind of like predated, and you can read this on the Record Store Day explanation, but they, you know, it predated kind of an MTV Storytellers type of thing where they would get the songwriters on stage and they would talk a little bit about the inspiration behind some of the songs, their process of writing, that kind of thing. And then they would play the songs kind of like a really like broken down kind of sparse version of the song. And I got, it was like, I looked up some of the stuff that they've already released from this series, and there's like some cool stuff. There's like a really, really, really cute version of I Want to Be Sedated with Joey Ramone, and they do this interview with him beforehand on stage about like his songwriting process for I Want to Be Sedated. And it's just like, it's so heartwarming, you guys. It's so Joey Ramone, where he's like so earnest, and he's talking, you know, about like, you know, the lyrics are like, you know, nothing to do, nowhere to go, and he's like really trying to tell you like what he was thinking and feeling when he wrote that lyric. And it's like, it's just very, very cool. And I don't know. Yeah, there's like a cool version out there of like Rick Ocasek talking about the Cars and singing Just What I Needed. Also, P.S. Like, is there anyone whose singing voice and speaking voice sound more different from one another than Rick Ocasek? Like, I don't think I'd really heard his speaking voice much. And I was like, wait, what? This is the same person? Like, and then he goes to sing and it's so like affected. But I don't know. That was like just like an interesting thing that came out of me looking up the story. So check that out. The series was called In Their Own Words. So that's like worth looking at. There might be some songwriters on there that there's already stuff that's out that's worth checking out. And I don't know, I was like, it's like to see my old friends, the Pink Lincolns, are getting a 7-inch re-released on Rad Girlfriend. I thought that was kind of cool. And I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't like feel as strongly about Record Store Day as other people do. So there's not like there's not as much room for me to be disappointed. I just kind of looked at this list and was like, yeah, this seems like cool shit.
And more. Will you be hitting up Record Store Day Canada?
Only for the Munsters at Home with the Munsters.
there you have it. Speaking of nostalgia, Laura Jane Grace has started an online petition for an Operation Ivy reunion at Riot Fest. And honestly, it really took off and a lot of people signed it. Also, Laura Jane Grace did a limited t-shirt sale where you had to order a t-shirt within like 2 or 3 days, which it was the Operation Ivy Energy logo, but it said Laura Jane Grace over top of it. I have very strong feelings about this, but who wants to kick this off?
Ah, you have very strong feelings about this. No, now I want to know what they are.
I hate all of this. I hate it. I hate
it. Oh, my God.
I hate every drop of this. And I'm the only one, apparently. First of all, Jesse Michaels has said multiple times. Jesse Michaels has said multiple times he loves Operation Ivy. He's happy that it excites people. But he was 19. He's grown as a person since then. And he doesn't sit around thinking about Operation Ivy. To the contrary, he did Kamen Rider, he did Big Rig, and also Classics of Love. And the new Classics of Love EP and, of course, the LP are both absolutely fantastic. So I feel it's maybe somewhat insulting, or if not insulting, just unnecessary to say, Jesse, let's check out this thing you did when you were 19. Instead, Jesse, you've got a kick-ass band right now that is blowing my mind wide open. Let's have more of that, and let's see that live. You know what I mean? Also, Jesse is in fine form. I've seen Jesse. I saw Classic Love live many times, and I've seen him provide. Well, as his recent performance at the Gun Club tribute showed, he's in fine form. Jesse Michaels is in top ranking. Like, he's still kicking ass. The other guys, maybe not so much. I mean, if we've all seen – I mean, listen, let's be real. Rancid is an amazing band. Rancid is a cool band. They got lots of cool tracks. Have you seen Rancid live in the past 3 or 4 years? The snap isn't quite there. The pop isn't quite there. I don't know. Actually, I do know. I kind of don't want to see some guys that are getting older, getting kind of moving into the later Lou Reed era of their career. I don't think I want to see them like doing like these songs that like are so powerful and well done. It's not going to be. It's so rare for a reunion to be as great as you hope it would be. The one exception, Samhain and Misfits, maybe. Maybe if, the Amoebics reunion before everything went totally topsy-turvy. Those were amazing reunions. But how about all the other ones? Like the replacement ones people didn't like so much, or like refuse people were like, yeah, you know. Why destroy the legacy of – not destroy, but why taint the legacy of Operation Ivy, particularly when we've got the wonderful successor, Classics of Love, that does – that has all the magic of Operation Ivy, but it's newer, more vibrant, and frankly, faster and harder. Unless they want to make a whole bunch of money, which if Jesse Michaels and Tim Armstrong want to make a whole bunch of money, that gets two thumbs up for me. Both those guys, everybody in Operation Ivy, if you ask me, should be rich because they've made amazing art and they should profit from that. I if that's what they want to do, I'd be like, let's do it, fellas. Let's see it. But I don't think that is necessarily their main concern. Also, I do wonder, like, I wonder if Laura Jane Grace reached out to Jesse Michaels and Tim Armstrong. Like, this does kind of put them in an odd space. Laura Jane Grace is someone with a considerable amount of pull and notice. It's like, Jesse has basically said he doesn't want to do an Operation Ivy reunion, although he hasn't ever said that will never happen. He usually just says, well, I'm not really thinking about that, or maybe, you know. But, like is it kind of unfair to say, Jesse, we want an Operation Ivy reunion. Give it to us. It's like, well, maybe that's not where he's at right now. Like Jesse Michaels is an unusual guy. He's an amazing artist, and he's going to do what he wants to do, and he's such an amazing artist. You should let him do what he wants to do because he's done amazing music. He's done very cool videos. He does amazing art. So let us not treat Jesse Michaels as a Walmart and say, I want a pound of sugar. I want a shirt for $7.95. Jesse's an artist. Jesse, do what you want to do, and we will enjoy it or not enjoy it. That's the nature of art. Also, I got to say, I might come off in the wrong here, but Laura Jane Grace – who is so high and mighty about people making money off record sales, who says, how dare someone commercialize record sales? Laura Jane Grace, who sells tickets through Ticketmaster and says, how dare people make money off bands profit directly from other bands' IP? So the message is, it is not okay to legally buy something and sell it as per market. Rather, you should steal the intellectual property of a band that you like that has considerable goodwill and let yourself profit off that other band's goodwill without that band's consent. That's okay. That's the Laura Jane Grace message. And I don't hate Laura Jane Grace. Just the past 2 years, I get more and more ignored by Laura Jane Grace. I feel it's a little bit of a Rollins syndrome. You say things, and it sounds cool when you're saying them, but there's no real substance beneath it. I don't know. Maybe I'm the bad guy here. And I don't want to be the bad guy, but I'm being honest. You know, I don't hate Laura Jane Grace. I just feel I just feel not everything is balancing on the scale. That's what I'm saying. Hallie Bullock, as Rancid finally said, crucify me. Sorry. Or no. Tell me all I know is that I don't know nothing. Go ahead.
Keep going.
Unity? Is it?
I'm going to tell you, you should journey to the end of your thoughts about Laura Jane Grace. No, I think, I don't know, I just thought this was funny. I guess I just didn't take it as seriously as you did. And I don't know it, I don't know if we have a way of knowing in what spirit it was actually done. I just thought it was funny. And like, I think that, you know, her point of like, everything's been so sucky. Like, one thing that would make us all feel really good would be an Op Ivy reunion. Like, let's just like petition them to make it happen. I also thought like that she, the fact that she said this is the only punk band reunion that matters anymore. I just thought it was like very funny. I signed the petition immediately. I don't know. I don't think anyone would like judge Jesse Michaels or be miffed. Although I don't know, maybe I'm giving people too much credit, but I don't think people feel that this has any real clout. It's just it's sort of a funny thing to be a part of. I don't know. That was just my take on it. And if they were to get back together, it's hard to say. I know exactly what you're saying. There's definitely bands that reunited that I've went to see that I was like, man, I wish I just had not gone to see this era of this band, because I would rather just remember them when they were at their peak. And then I don't know, then there's bands like the Descendants and
true
I don't know, there's bands that have gotten back together that it's really Lifetime, where I've been super super excited to see them play again and grateful that they made the effort of polishing off those old songs and being willing to play them all for us again. So it's hard to say until bands reunite whether it was a good idea or not, right? It's like you kind of have to see it happen to know whether it maybe should have like been laid to rest, you know.
I will add that the Flag reunion was amazing, but Sam, during this conversation, I just realized I'm a massive hypocrite. Do you know why I'm a massive hypocrite?
Did you accidentally sign this petition and like you didn't even realize you did it because you were like drunk off of like
rage,
like Hawkwind or something? Like, were you listening to Hawkwind and was like in such like another world and you signed this accidentally?
No, I recall a number of years, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, someone started a petition to get Mikey Ergy into Against Me.
Oh, right.
Wow. I totally just cost myself all my credibility. Go ahead, Sam.
I can't now.
Junkie's running dry.
Yeah. So, okay. So when I saw this was a thing, right, the first thing that came into my mind was, wait, so you want this for Riot Fest? What Riot Fest? Because isn't Riot Fest like happening like tomorrow? So like, I'm like, trying to figure out, are they trying to get this like to happen like this year, or is it supposed to happen for like a future Riot Fest, you know? So that was one, because I would like someone to clarify that for me, because I think this thing was started this week or something, like yes, like September 13th or something like that. So one, two, I don't know if Operation Ivy is going to ever reunite. I think I read on Wikipedia they've said numerous times that they will not do any reunions. So maybe they'll actually stick to that. I don't know. There's tons of other bands that I would love to see a reunion for. And unfortunately, Operation Ivy is not one of them for me, but I do understand that the punk community, probably a lot of people would actually want to see this. So I do think that if Riot Fest could pull this off, it's going to be a huge deal. And if they do it for this year, people's going to be hella bummed. If they do it for next year, then I do think that that would be a fun thing. Because then the people that want to see Op Ivy will go to Chicago and go to Riot Fest. I'm done.
And did more. John, would you go see the Operation Ivy reunion, or would you cross your arms and stare at the back wall like myself while everyone else is having fun?
I'd stand at the back with arms crossed, but staring directly at the stage. It would be like, I don't think it's gonna happen, and I kind of hope it doesn't, because yeah, like exactly, Jesse Michaels is doing awesome stuff, like World of Burning Hate was amazing, and I don't know, like it doesn't seem like anyone wants to reunite the band. Like, it seems like this is putting pressure on people to maybe do something or consider something that they don't want to do. If they want to do it, I mean, like, by all means, go for it. I think that would be, like, it would mean a lot to a lot of people, and, you know, it would be really, really cool. But it seems out of place almost. But, you know, if it works, it works.
Well, they have it. I'm going to flip-flop some stories, actually, because I don't want to end on, like, an ultra-bummer story. So I'm going to do the ultra-bummer story right now, and then we'll work our way up. So Afrika Bambaataa has been sued for child sex trafficking, and this is a gnarly story. Apparently, a lot of the punkers don't know who Afrika Bambaataa is, which kind of really surprised me. Setting aside the horrible accusations, which have a lot of evidence on their behalf, Afrika Bambaataa is a very important hip hop culture creator. He's one of the first DJ mixers. He had an incredibly important DJ mix called Death Mix or Death Mix 2000. He's one of the inventors of turntable scratching, turntable mixing, turntable fading, and he also is one of the very first, if not the first, guys to mix punk with post-punk, I mean, hip-hop with punk and post-punk. That's World Destruction with Afrika Bambaataa and John Lydon. And also, he's the guy that's credited with introducing Kraftwerk and German electronic music into hip-hop and essentially being one of the key elements that made hip-hop be hip-hop, along with the combination of Chic's Good Times, Bob James going to New Orleans, going to Mardi Gras, and a couple other very important pieces which are considered the primordial pieces of hip-hop. So, like, if we were to compare Afrika Bambaataa to punk rock, he's as important as, I don't know, The Clash or The Sex Pistols or The Damned. Like, he's a really – or The Stooges maybe. Like, he's an extremely important person in hip-hop culture, like extremely important. A few years ago – he's the founder of what's called the Zulu Nation, which the Zulu Nation really isn't that big anymore. And I don't think they were ever that big, but they're smaller than ever. Zulu Nation is considered the organization that codified the concept of hip-hop and the elements of hip-hop, the elements being emceeing, breakdancing, scratching, beatboxing. Beatboxing, and graffiti. Those are the five elements of hip-hop. And so Afrika Bambaataa is kind of the guy that made hip-hop a literal religion, if you will, through the Zulu Nation. A few years ago, a number of people said that Afrika Bambaataa, a number of people that were young men at the time, said Afrika Bambaataa molested them during the height and after the height of the Zulu Nation. He ended up back at first the Zulu Nation kind of defended Afrika Bambaataa, saying it's all lies, they're making stuff up. And a couple of important MCs actually stepped up and said this is all a coordinated attack to discredit Afrika Bambaataa. But as more evidence came to light, the Zulu Nation was like, oh, actually, no, we're firing them. And those other MCs kind of backed up and said, oh, well, we didn't know all the facts. Now, 4 years later, he's being sued for a lot of really gnarly stuff. I mean, basically, the allegations are that numerous kids, he would show them dirty videos and do not cool things with them, and also take them to other places and with other dudes do like not cool things, and I don't mean to be flippant, like do horrible things, not cool, do really 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 bad things with kids. Afrika Bambaataa at the time of the article had not filed a response to the lawsuit. I don't know if you want to get into the law aspect or not. In the comments, some people were trying to be amateur lawyers and they were totally wrong, which annoyed me. But maybe we don't need to talk about it. Anyways, this is shocking and concerning of hip hop. But on the other hand, hip hop as a whole isn't really shaken because it's grown so much from the Afrika Bambaataa era. It's almost like I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but like it's not really affecting contemporary hip hop because hip hop started out as a very niche cult thing and now is mainstream. So the niche cult thing that started it, I don't want to say it's forgotten, but it doesn't really have the spotlight on it like it did in the 90s and maybe even early 2000s. I don't know. Does anybody have any comments on this, or is this just a crazy, sad thing? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, this has made me so sad and so angry to read. I mean, I don't know. What do you really say? It's just, it's rough because, like, hip hop, rock and roll, film, comedy. It's like we have these stories that we tell ourselves about the history of these art forms. And like just especially within the last few years, it's like so many of the people that we consider like so critical to the fabric of the foundation of the thing that we love. Like it's just so heartbreaking to have to like look back at your history and reconcile it with like a lot of, you know, just people that really abused power and hurt people and used the things they were doing artistically as a means by which to, like, yeah, just, like, cause incredible hurt. I don't know what to say about it other than just, like, I'm, as a fan of pop culture, I'm, you know, we talk about this a lot. I'm just still trying to figure out how to reconcile a lot of this stuff. And so, yeah, I just, you know, hip hop isn't, I like hip hop. It's not like my genre of like my heart, my passion, but I feel badly for hip hop lovers and people who are attached to this history. I feel bad. It's just bad when your heroes turn out to be kind of terrible people. It hurts, you know?
True that. Well said. The other thing I'll add is time and time again, people say, you know, I hate gay people, or I hate this, or I hate that. A lot of the times it's themselves that they hate. You know what I mean? This case included as well. So listen, let's start working our way up here. Green Day, they released a cover of Kiss's I Want to Rock and Roll All Night. And every single person in the world said, why? And more, why?
Because it's fun, because they're having a good time, and they're putting something out there that's showcasing them having a good time, and their fans having a good time, and just bringing some, like, well, because it's all live footage, the video is all live footage from, like, the Hella Mega Tour, you know, and it's like, look, we're gathering, we're having a concert, we're having a show, we're showing up, we're, you know, the world isn't all hell, you know, like there's some good things. So I liked this, like it's kind of like a little cheesy and stuff, but I thought it was good. And then there's the part in the video where Mike Dirnt is in the, like, I think he's in a golf cart and he's kind of dancing and making like goofy faces, and it warmed my heart, it made my day. It restored everything good in the world. You know, and it's so nice to see people not like so stressed and not so worried, and, you know, it's nice to see something light and good. And, you know, Green Day wanted to do this, they did this, and, you know, they're living their dream. They don't give one flying fuck what anyone else thinks. So that's another good thing. What were your guys' takes on it?
So I'm with everyone else saying why. Why do we need this? I think that covers are cool. Sometimes I do think that if they wanted to put out a cover, maybe they should have done it in conjunction with a covers album or something, right? I would have rather seen a music video, like a live music video of them being them and having fun and stuff. Like, maybe if they released it with another single from, you know, their latest album or something like that. The video itself I actually found delightful. it is very nice to see people being normal. I've actually gone to a couple of shows recently, so normal is what we try to, you know, achieve these days, right? And not be being trapped in your house. But yeah, no, I do think that the video really encapsulates, like, just these guys having a lot of fun, and probably them being their normal maniac selves. So I'm for the video, probably not for the song.
John, did you like this?
I think it more changed my opinion, honestly. I hated it. Yay! And now I'm like, you know, they're just having fun. And I'm like, I can't argue with fun. You know, everyone's having fun with Operation Ivy. I'm like, this is stupid. Well, like everyone's having Green Day's covering Kiss. Everyone's like, hooray, yeah, this is silly and fun. Like, and I'm like, no, I want serious music. Everything needs to sound like, I don't know, Throne music or Lou Reed. You know, like, my opinion has been changed. Everyone's having fun, and I'm pro fun. Hey, did anyone else notice that Johnny Knoxville's in this video?
Oh, no.
Yes, I didn't notice that.
I'm pretty sure that's him at 208. It's kind of cool they had him in there, but they didn't, like, make a big deal out of it. Also, kudos on Green Day for literally not aging in the past 25 years. like, it's insane how Billy Joel looks not exactly, but almost exactly like he did in 1994. Like, it's crazy how this band doesn't age.
It's
Hallie
a little creepy, right? And like, also, like, this is like a lot, you know, this is like a live track that they released, but it like sounds so perfect. There's not like a single sour note in it. I'm a little bit like, have Green Day been replaced by robots? like, are they humanoids? Like, are they like, what's going on here? I don't know. Like, I thought this was fine. I don't really care. The video kind of just, again, they're just like having fun. Who cares? But like, it seemed a little bit just like it was a commercial for their tour, right? Like, it seemed like a little bit like a commercial of like, look, like, come see a live show. You'll still have a good time, which is like a perfectly good message. I don't really have like a problem with it, but it just definitely the video seemed like it was just supposed to help sell tickets to their tour. Again, I don't really have a problem with that, but it is like, I don't know, something about it seemed a little strange to me. And even when Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley were like tweeting about this, like, they weren't like, oh, they weren't like, oh, hey, we like this cover, cool. They specifically were like, look, Green Day tonight in Dallas, tomorrow in Houston. Like, it's, I was like, these paid tweets by Kiss, like, to promote Green Day's tour. Something seemed strange about it. But, you know, musicians just at this point and people doing live shows, they just got to do what they got to do. So I'm not really judging any of it, you know?
Do you guys think Billy Joe has amazing genetics or amazing cash flow? Like, he really does look exactly like he did 20 years ago.
Yeah, I think maybe there's some, like, plastic surgery going on there. Right? There has to be, right? Because he just doesn't look his age at all. It's like
Abnormal. He just like found the power of like Japanese and Korean skincare and is using like snail essence to make himself look so good.
Listen, yes. I'm gonna have to be delicate here, but I will say I think the Vietnamese diet is probably the healthiest diet in the world, because like at my first law job, a lot of our clients were Vietnamese and they looked so much younger than they were. Like it's crazy. Like it's like mostly like broths and like vegetables. It's like the healthiest thing, and fish, you know, it's like all good protein. Like the Vietnamese diet, I think, is the healthiest diet in the world. Really.
So that's the key to Green Day not aging. They're not robots. They're eating a Korean diet. It's got to be one of these two, John. One of us is right. Clearly.
Or are they robots that eat pho? let's go put this on QAnon right now. Listen, speaking of a young band that's getting people excited, Aim on the Sniffers, they finally released their long-awaited, and by long-awaited, I mean year-long, second album. The album is called Comfort to Me. And honestly, actually, the sales have been off the charts in that the sales have surpassed the label's expectations, and it is possibly even it has broken the Billboard 100 in the UK. Billboard 200 in the UK has broken the top 10, and it might even in the USA. Aim on the Sniffers, new album. What did you guys think?
It's fucking amazing. It's so good. I think this band deserves like all – I just feel like they deserve all the record sales, all the hype. I just think they're doing something exciting. It sounds real. It sounds like, I don't know. I feel like this is just injecting the punk scene with like really some like vital, like new energy. That's like, I think like this feels to me like a band that not just punk fans could get into, between like what I'm sure their live performances are completely off the chain. It's like, it's powerful and like there's something really raw about it, but it's not dumb. It's like still just, it's, there's something like smart and hip about it. I love it. I'm so into this. You Sam, guys?
Aim on Sniffers, Sam, what'd you think?
This was cool. I don't think I would listen to it every day, but I did listen to it. I did run through it today, and I do see why there is hype about them. I do have one song that I'm really into. What is it called? Oh my god, I can't remember a thing anymore. This is really bad. Maggot? Yeah, Maggot.
Maggot was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, I really, really dig that song. I don't think they released it as a single. So that's something that people should definitely listen to and check out, you know, if you haven't already.
And more, what do you think of Aim on the Sniffers?
The album is great. I've listened to it quite regularly. It is now in healthy rotation, and every time I listen to it, one song sticks out way more than the others, and then I just kind of focus on that one for a little bit. Like today when I listened to it, Knifey really stuck out, and it was just yeah, it's good. And then the whole thing together, it flows really well. And because that one goes into I Don't Need a Cunt Like You to Love Me, which it fits so well. Everything fits so well. It's so good. So I rate it very highly right now. And I think it'll be long. It has longevity. It has legs.
Mm.
John, you've been you've said a lot of that you really hope that this band isn't going in some new direction that isn't your thing. What now, having heard the whole album, where have you landed on it?
I think it's stupid. No. I'm not troubled by the fact that Amel and the Sniffers are going in a new-ish direction, and that's probably the right move. The EPs and the album, honestly, each of the EPs is slightly different than the other, and the album is different. The album was more hardcore than the EPs. I loved how the band kind of snapped together in that classic Australian vibe, and that like everyone's one single unit at a battering ram crashing forward. I thought that album, the first album, was fantastic. This new one does have the sound that I thought was significantly different, and I'm not sure utilized their powers, and that a lot of these tracks are a powerful but controlled riff with Amy yelling over the top. Meanwhile, put Amy's performance on this album and her lyrics are fantastic. A lot of tracks do have that kind of Gang of Four thing sped up, and that it's a riff and yelling over the top, but they don't necessarily snap together. And if anything, they almost contrast from each other. That being said, my favorite tracks on this release were the ones that kind of did step outside of that mold, Maggots. And let's see here. There was another track called I think it was Don't Fence Me In and Hurts. They kind of didn't follow that pattern. They had a different vibe. I think it's an interesting album, and I think it's going in the right direction. And I was pleasantly surprised that the sum is greater than the parts, and that while one song in of itself didn't thrill me, when put together, I actually thought it was a more full statement, if you will. That being said, I don't love it as much as the first one, just because it does feel like some of the tracks are just them doing a post-punk or punk riff played in a post-punk style with Amy yelling over top, and I wish we had that battering ram cohesion. But that being said, I definitely dig it. I think it's cool. I'm going to keep listening to it. And I didn't like the first one. I didn't love it, and then after three plays, it clicked, and I absolutely adore that first album. That might happen with this one. I think this might be the difficult second album that is good and interesting, but I think the third one is going to be the real mind blower. That's what I think.
I agree with you in that there were songs that we had talked about, the singles, that when they came up in the album, I'd liked them to begin with, but I liked them better. There is something about this as a body of songs that elevates every single song.
Indeed. Well, speaking of elevating songs, let's wrap up Shorty number one. Who wants to play a tune?
I can play a tune because we talked about them a couple of episodes ago. And I liked them so much, and I realized I'd never played any Ellen and the Degenerates on this show.
Yes.
I don't, probably other people have, But yeah, I've been thinking about it ever since then, that I just really wanted to play something from them. So this is Bozo by Ellen and the Degenerates, and it's off Return of the Herb.